Realty Nation. It's your host, Abhi Golhar. Welcome to the Think Realty podcast. You know, I'm excited to have a conversation today with George Newberry. Now, one of the things that I want you to take away from this conversation, not only the story, but the fact that sometimes you have to fail before you succeed. You know, in fact, you have to. There's no prerequisite. There's no just success, and more success. You have to make mistakes so that you learn the lesson, so that you can start to move forward. And George, my guest today, is the definition of that. I'm not going to share his story. I could go on and do an intro for the next 30 seconds, but I would probably not do it justice. So I will bring him on in a second, and then, of course, we will talk about pre-REO and how you as an investor can really take advantage of the opportunities that are in the marketplace right now, especially in a seller's market. You know, right now, when we're recording this, it is, I mean, you're having trouble finding deals, you're trying to do yellow letters, you're trying to do postcards, you're spending thousands of dollars a month on Google ads, trying to get the number one, number two slots, and guess what's happening? Probably not getting that high equity deal that you want where those sellers are interested in selling for a major discount. Frankly, why would they? It's a seller's market. They don't need you. So what you need are the strategies that George is going to talk about today. Before we get to him, the sponsor of today's podcast is Think Multifamily. Whether you're a passive investor looking for passive income or an aspiring syndicator ready to learn how to grow big and fast, Think Multifamily is the industry's leading acquisition and education company, and they're here to help you invest for your family's future every step of the way. For more information, visit www.thinkmultifamily.com. Without any further ado, George, welcome to the show, man. How are you doing? Good to see you.
Hey, good. I appreciate you having me on.
You got it. Before we're getting started, we were sharing stories, and I kind of feel that's where we need to start. So give us a little bit about who you are, your background.
Sure. So I started as an entrepreneur very early. I was a newspaper boy at 7 years old. I sold ice cream from a push cart when I was 13 and started a record company from my parents' garage when I was 17. My parents were very gracious in letting me leave school at 16 as soon as I passed the GED. And from then on, and even before that, my education has all been real life, good and bad. So here's what's happened, though. Starting with 25, I started buying real estate. I bought a 4-unit apartment building in South Central Los Angeles, and I kept buying until I had over 4,000 units across the country. And then an ice storm devastated my largest holding. It was 1,100 units in Columbus, Ohio, called Woodland Meadows. Ice storm hit the property, and it triggered an extraordinary sequence of events in which I lost everything and ended up $26 million in debt. That was, extraordinarily trying time. I started grinding my teeth. I've had, since had some surgery to repair that, and I had, or try to repair that. But it was going from, hey, everything was going right. I worked really hard to make things work. And even when things were going rocky, I was hands-on and made things work. But after that, Christmas Eve, 2004 ice storm, lost everything, $26 million in debt. And everything was going wrong. I saw an opportunity in 2007, once I started hearing about the housing crisis, to share my experience as an overwhelmed debtor with families who were at risk of foreclosure. At that point, 2007 to early 2008, the millions of families were underwater and at risk of foreclosure on their homes. So I started American Homeowner Preservation, which started out as a 501c3 nonprofit organization to help families at risk of foreclosure stay in their homes. And we had a... And that's grown. We transitioned to becoming, we became a for-profit. And since then, we are a purchaser of distressed mortgages. We bought more than 10,000 mortgages in the last decade. We also have morphed into a national mortgage servicer, AHP Servicing. We are now launching a title insurance company, AHP Title. We have pre-REO, which is a platform in which we market distressed mortgages. We have, debt cleanse, which is a legal plan that helps consumers who cannot afford their debts. So it's morphed into a whole bunch of different companies, but all from that devastation. I'll tell you, like you remarked at the top of the show, the best lessons in business or in life, period, are learned when your back's against the wall. You're trying to assess what your options are, and you're trying to find a way forward. And when you do that, and you succeed, that's, I think, where success really lies. And I have to tell you, unfortunately, a lot of people hit that challenge, what I call a burn zone, which is where, and they have trouble navigating, getting to the other side. And sometimes that hampers their potential for future success. And just as an aside, I've told this story so many times, I finally wrote a book. The book is Burn Zones. It's on, you can't see it in, but either way, it's Burn Zones. It's on Amazon. And it tells the true story, or the blow by blow of my financial, rise, my financial collapse, and my subsequent rebirth, or let's call it a resurrection, since it's just a few days after Easter.
There you go.
That was and that's what happened. And I do find people, you look at all the big, there's so many big success stories in this country of business leaders and whatnot. You look at their history before they were big successes, and you'll see failure. I mean, I'll look at Bill Gates. He started this traffic data reporting company, which was a thing called Trafidata or something like that, collapse, failure, didn't work. But that, he'll tell the story that led to his success, successful founding later of Microsoft. And Steve Jobs, he talks about when he came back into Apple, and when Apple was struggling, he had stepped away, came back, it was struggling. And he revolutionized the company after that. And there's just story after story after story. And those are stories to learn from, much better than any college education or advanced education. So many times really doing it and learning from it. That's why people right now, I talk to people about buying distressed mortgages, and they're oftentimes real estate investors. So they kind of know the business overall, but they don't know distressed mortgage investing. And so but I always people, hey, do it, do one. That's how you're going to really learn. You can read books, attend webinars and all this kind of stuff. But when you actually do one is when you really learn.
Yeah. One of the things that I always end up thinking about are my massive failures, whether it's as an entrepreneur, as a startup founder, as an acquisition entrepreneur, as a VC, as an angel. I've had all of these roles and I continue to play these roles. Oh, and then a real estate investor just for fun. And you take a look at some of the worst failures I've ever had. And it's because of those that I can navigate the murkiest of waters. And I can take advantage of those waters. And I'll go so far as to say, so my dad is a professor. He's been teaching since 83. I was born in 84. And if there's one thing that I've realized from him, and he's taught me, it's that if you want to get an advanced degree, do so going into that advanced degree program with a very specific objective and also meet the people there. Right? The reason you go to Harvard is not necessarily for the material. It's also because the professors are super amazing and also your connections that you make there. If you want to take a quick shortcut. But frankly, I agree with you, George, you don't need that. What you really need is a very strong will to survive and a strong will to get there. Because if you let college take the creativity out of you, or if you let an MBA take the creativity out of you, then you are perfectly in line for being a drone for McKinsey, for a Bain & Company, for a PricewaterhouseCoopers, because that's what happens. And you fall into this very specific demographic of people that unfortunately don't know any better. Anyway, yeah. I'm off my soapbox now. Let's talk about pre-REO, and then we'll wrap up after that. Pre-REO is a very specific term of your company, and it's not just REO, right? Like, it's before you get there. We talk about distressed mortgages. We talk about how to invest in that. Give me a little color around that, because a lot of pro investors still don't know that game. Like, they know of the game, but they don't really know how to play that game. So take about a minute and a half, explain what the game is, and then I have a specific pointed question for you after.
Sure. It's distressed mortgage investing. So instead of buying the real estate, you're actually buying the loan that's secured by that real estate. And that is a, it's a tough when we first started buying notes, it was really tough to find out, how do you really buy notes? How do you buy from banks? How do you buy from hedge funds? And how do you get involved in this? So it was very, very difficult. And what we're doing with Priario is we're making it accessible for big hedge funds, eventually, well, banks too. But right now we have large hedge funds who are offering distressed mortgages on the Priario platform. And these can be purchased by individual investors. Now, you know, there's a number of reasons why most funds don't want to sell. You know, if they have 100 loans to sell, they don't want to enter into 100 different contracts to sell them, you know, so they want to sell in groups. So we've kind of come up with solutions. All the loans go to a trust, the trustees, U.S. Bank. Hedge funds are very comfortable in selling to a trust with U.S. Bank as a trustee. But then we provide participation interest to local investors who participate in, you know, one or several assets of their choosing. And that kind of extra element has been what's made it comfortable for large institutional funds to say, hey, okay, we'll do this. They know that they're ultimately, there's participation by local investors, but it's not, you know, they're not having to sell, hey, this loan to Bob, this loan to Mary, this loan to Steve. That would never work. And that's why attempts to do this in the past have not worked, and why I think we're gaining traction. The other component, by having the trust, we're able to provide financing, which is very, very difficult to get to finance the purchase of a note. Under Priario, we provide 75% financing, and the local investor has to come up with 25%. They can pay us off the next day if they like, and own it outright, but most 90% plus end up taking care of the financing. But in a nutshell, we're providing a platform where a local investor can buy a distressed mortgage or multiple mortgages, and they're typically bought, you know, direct from large hedge funds, and buy these at big discounts. So we encourage the funds to list these at 75% of what they think the REO is worth. So if they think that property is worth $200,000, hey, sell the note for $150,000.
Why would the fund? Yeah. So why would the funds do that? Why would the funds say, hey, we know it's worth $200,000. I want to get rid of it for $150,000, you know, $160,000.
Yeah. Easy answer. I mean, if I'm a fund, because we've sold, I mean, we have funds and we've sold some of our assets on here as well. If I'm a fund and I'm in Chicago and this property is in Seattle or New York or Miami, Florida, wherever it is, I know it's going to take me to achieve that 200, get it to the point that I have an REO that I can sell. I'm going to have to complete the foreclosure. And in many parts of the country, like New York, Illinois, where I am, Florida, it's going to take a year or more to get to get title to that property. So there's a cost of capital. There's also legal fees. If it's vacant, it could get hit with code enforcement and vacant property registration and property preservation, grass cutting, snow removal, board ups, repairs, all those things could be the costs. And if I look back through my portfolio, especially if it's vacant, those costs are likely to be pretty substantial. So it's better for me to take 150 today than it is to get 200 in a year. And even when I get 200, the property's worth 200, there's still probably going to be I have to pay a broker, some closing costs. I'm still going to get 90 in 2 years. So cash today is definitely worth taking that discount. And the reality is they ask 75%. A couple times they've sold for more. The vast majority probably end up selling for 70-75% range of the current as-is value of the property. And that's for a local investor who's ultimately going to be the consumer of that REO, the buyer, the investor in that REO, for them, you know, buying it early in the food chain and getting that greater discount is a huge win, particularly, as you said, the inventory to buy as an REO investor right now, that inventory is so skinny.
Yeah.
This gives them, like, this is, there's still a lot of these assets and of distressed mortgage
loans
and more to come.
So that kind of begs my next question is, we talk about the supply and demand right now for real estate investors. A lot of demand, not enough supply, right? Everybody and their mother out there is watching HGTV and they're like, uh-huh. Hey, I want to go buy a house. I want to be Chip and Joanna Gaines. Great, you can, right? This is America. You can do anything here. But they're still having troubles finding the property. But on the flip side of this, there is not enough supply. There's not enough supply to go around. So that creates a seller's market. The question, I guess, then for you is, why doesn't the trust or the institutional fund or whatever, or whomever is selling the property or listing that mortgage on your platform, why do they not just sell the property and take advantage of the gains they would see in the market today anyway?
But they don't have the property. Today, they just have the mortgage. And if I have a mortgage today and it's secured by a property in New York, as an example, I know it's right now, New York is not generally issuing default judgments. I mean, not default judgment, foreclosure judgments. So if I've gone all the way through the foreclosure process to the end and I'm waiting for the court to award a judgment, because of COVID, they've been postponing these hearings on the judgments. So it's been, I may have been at the point of judgment a year and a half ago, I'm still there. Right. And meanwhile, that property, if it's vacant, I'm having to pay, you know, a property preservation, insurance, property taxes. I'm absorbing all that. So if I can get that into the hands of a local investor, and especially if it's vacant, we advocate a strategy. If there's a long, you know, there's several months or a year or more to get to foreclosure, we advocate a strategy where that local investor will appoint a receiver, which is typically a real estate agent, who can repair and rent the property during the foreclosure period. No fund is going to do that. No large scale fund is going to do that. It's just too many pieces to put together. But the local investor who's on the ground, who's like within an hour or so of that property and could coordinate this, they're almost treating it like it's going to be their property through a receiver. Yeah. And then knowing that eventually there's a foreclosure sale and they likely will get title to the property. That's a strategy where the fund, hey, I'm okay exiting at 75%, and that local investor can you know, A, get in access inventory at big discounts and probably get gains that they would achieve gains that they otherwise would not, just buying REO like they traditionally would on the competitive market.
Got it. So your platform is making it easier, quicker, potential financing out there, and I don't have to call my community bank, sit down with that individual that's responsible for loss mitigation and say, hey, you know, Candace or Joe or whomever, you know, my name's Abby, local real estate investor. Do you have anything on the books that you're considering a toxic asset or, you know, a tape of delinquent mortgages that you're looking at selling, and I can't like pick and choose, I have to buy. I mean, listen, if you want to go down that road, feel free, but you will spend between 6 and 8 months of daily phone calls and virtual meetings with these people to maybe have some level of relative success. I think what George and his team have built is a platform that says, screw that, you don't need any of that. What you really need to do is register here. So in 30 seconds less, George, then we got to wrap it up. What is step 1, 2, and 3 on how I can get access to these distressed mortgages and start putting my money to work?
Sure, it's easy. Go to prereo.com. You can register as a buyer. You can then browse assets. You can sort them by your state, for instance, and then you can browse and make bids. As you make bids, you'll get counteroffer. You may get it accepted. You may get a counteroffer. Eventually, you get to an agreed upon sales price, and then we, you know, closing a couple weeks later. Pre-REO, AHP Servicing, Activist Legal are all there as resources for you both before and after your acquisition to make sure, especially many investors. We have seasoned note investors who are using pre-REO, but also new note investors. And we want to make that transition from real estate investor to note investor as seamless as possible. And we have resources and team members who are at your disposal to assist with that. To make sure it's a success, because we're in the vast majority of these, we're putting up 75% of the money. So you're putting up 25%. We want to make sure that you succeed. And we're already seeing it. If you succeed, then you're coming back and you're buying more. And we already see that. We have people who bought one. Now they're coming back and buying 3 or 5 or whatnot. So we have a lot of repeat buyers, and we expect that to grow significantly. And when this deluge, all these foreclosure moratoriums and other COVID holds come off, there will be a flood of distressed mortgages hitting the market. We hope to transact those through a large percentage go through pre-REO, and that's what we're building and setting up for.
Bingo. George, that's it. I can see a play where auction.com acquires you depending on volume. I'm pretty sure you've thought of that. I see the corner of your kind of lips smiling a little bit.
We keep hiring people from auction.com, so who knows, maybe we'll be buying auction.com. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, either way, right? That was the second part of my comment. I'm like, kind of interesting. Anyway, I'm paying close attention to you guys. Thanks so much for the time and, of course, everything that you're doing in the space to encourage investment. So you rock, man. We'll also connect offline. There's so many different things we've got to talk about. And Think Realty Nation, that's the benefit that you get here. George and his team are super accessible to you in ways that they may not be otherwise. So, again, George, thanks so much for the time, and we'll talk here again soon. Thank you. The next segment is brought to you by briefcase.email. Join thousands of readers and sign up at briefcase.email to receive a free weekly newsletter for real estate entrepreneurs. Briefcase loves to have fun with their newsletter. So if you don't laugh or if you don't cry, they'll give you your money back. Go to briefcase.email to sign up. For this segment, we're talking about hard money loans demystified. Our friends at Stratton Equities, Michael McHale, wrote this article. It talks about hard money loans and fix and flip loans. Highly recommend that you check it out on thinkrealty.com. If you're a little confused about the hard money lending space and you're thinking to yourself, well, I need money. I've got a project. How do I kind of bring the two together? This is a really good starting point. The more research, the more analysis that you do on the front end, I get it. You're thinking, okay, well, what about this entire paralysis of analysis thing? Forget about that. You need to educate yourself. If you're not educating yourself from the get-go, you won't be able to pair the two properly. This article talks about a couple of things. It talks about what LTVs you need to be paying attention to. Does a credit score even matter? What about your experience? And what if you have no experience? How do you still get a loan from a hard money lender? Fix and flip loans specifically, you need a really good GC, a general contractor. You need to show that you've done these deals a couple of times. And if you don't, partner with somebody who has. Showing the right history gets you the better rates, which increases your profitability. All right, so let's kind of do the math here. If you're paying 15% on a hard money deal, on a hard money loan, versus 9%, what's the difference? That's right, 6%. Is it? That's right. 15 minus 9 is 6. So you could potentially be saving $60,000 depending on the size of your loan. And it's a really big thing. That's money that goes right back into your pocket that you don't have to pay anybody else, especially that hard money lender. You hear me on that? So your fix and flip loans, in this article, Michael talks about, quote, contrary to hard money loans, fix and flip loans are usually sold on the secondary market and go through a full underwriting and tighter guidelines. For instance, depending on the lender, fix and flip loans have a minimum FICO requirement. We talked about that. And additionally, the borrowers can't have any late payments, foreclosures, judgments, or bankruptcies on their credit for 24 to 36 months. Super, super important here. So if you're looking for a fix and flip loan and you're thinking, well, you know, geez, I might have a judgment or I might have a couple of things going on my credit report, then that's a major issue. Go fix that and then maybe partner with somebody that doesn't have these things as like a co-signer on your loan. And now all of a sudden you're in the clear while you're working on some of the challenges on your credit. So there are a lot of ways that you can get around it. Check out this podcast post. Watch this all over again too. The title of this post is called Hard Money Loans Demystified, written by Don Winner, who is with Stratton Equities. So make sure that you get that information. All right, we gotta go. Before we do, wanna give a huge shout out to the podcast sponsor again, Think Multifamily, and also to remind you that we have a conference coming up in September, from September 18th to the 19th in Baltimore. It's the Think Realty Conference and Expo. It's a hybrid one, though. It's in person and also it's virtual. You want to make sure that you set your sights on making 2021, or even at that point in time, wrapping up 2021 with more knowledge and more know-how, and going into 2020 with a solid frame of mind. 2021 would have been kind of over by then. So what are we doing for 2022 to really rock and roll? And what's the strategy that we want to deploy? That's what we'll be talking about at the Think Realty Hybrid Conference and Expo in Baltimore. For a limited time, though, right now, you can receive a buy one, get one deal on your both live and virtual tickets. So what you want to do is go to thinkrealty.com/Baltimore, type in the code podcast, and you'll get a 2-for-1 deal. So we made that happen for you. Super excited. Make sure you check that out. And of course, I'll see you there. That wraps up the show. If you have any questions, you want to get in touch with me, you know how to do it. See me anywhere online on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, wherever your heart desires, and also thinkrealty.com. Until next time, happy investing.